Hello, my name is Nina, and I'll be reading the Bible for us tonight. So open your Bibles and join with me. The passage comes from 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 5 to 11. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, "Ask for whatever you want me to give you." Solomon answered, "You have shown great kindness to your servant, my father David, because he was faithful to you and righteous and upright in heart. You have continued this great kindness to him and have given him a son to sit on his throne this very day. Now, Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David, but I am only a little child and do not know how to carry out my duties. Your servant is here among the people, and you have chosen a great people, too numerous to count or number. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours?" The Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, "Since you have asked for this, and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have you asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice." The second passage is from 1 Kings chapter 11, verses 1 to 4. King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women, besides Pharaoh's daughter: Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonian, and Hittites. They were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, "You must not intermarry with them, because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods." Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. He had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his hearts after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God. And the heart of David his father had been.
Well, hey, my name's Tom, if I haven't met you before. Love to do that afterwards. If you missed last week, you did miss out. Let me catch you up. We're in the book of Song of Songs, which is not a book of the Bible that many churches spend many, many weeks looking at, but that is exactly what we're doing, trying something a little bit new. Song of Songs is basically a celebration of human sexuality, relationships, love. And I think one of the things that I find really helpful about studying the Book of Songs, big picture, is it helps us with questions like this. I wonder if you've ever thought or been asked, hey, is the Bible anti-sex? Because maybe you read bits of the New Testament and you go, oh, there's like a restriction on how I'm supposed to use sexuality here. But you come to the Book of Song of Songs and you say, wow, it can't be the case that God is anti-sexuality, because have you read this book? Here's another one. If you go into like one of those regular bookshops, or you go online and you look at the bestseller list, particularly within the realm of like self-help, or maybe you're watching certain kind of YouTubers or podcasters or whatever, they will often be drawing from Greek Stoicism, which is a philosophy which kind of, Stoa, I think, is connected to the word rock. It's the idea of being like a rock in the face of turbulent circumstances and having control over your own passions and your emotions and being kind of unfazable. And there's something to be learned from that, but then you read the Song of Songs and you go, wow, there must be a place in the human experience for passion, enjoyment, large emotions, because it's all there in our book. Third thing that I'm loving about the Song of Songs is how sensitive of a celebration it is. Because I imagine that in a room like this, there are going to be some of us, and we read the Book of Song of Songs, and we say, this is actually unpleasant to read. This hurts to read, because I would love to be in a relationship like this, and I'm not. Maybe I was, and it's no longer. Maybe I always wanted all of this, but I can't find anybody who's going to relate to me like this. And so you're reading the Book of Song of Songs, and you go, actually, this doesn't make me feel good at all. It just makes me feel like I'm missing out on something. But I love that the whole way through the Book of Song of Songs, there's quite a sensitive and realistic celebration of human sexuality, relationships, and love. There's kind of some weird little awkward passages you weren't expecting along the way, if you look at the details, and you go, wow, that is such a real representation of the fact that love and human relationships don't always go super smoothly. It's all right there in the way that God laid it out for us. So, Song of Songs, I'm glad that we're spending so many weeks in it, and I hope that as we go through the book together, we can exercise that kind of sensitivity towards each other as we all come from our different spaces and places. Song of Songs, a couple of key characters. It's basically about one guy and one woman who really, really like each other, but there's a couple of minor characters. For example, the daughters of Jerusalem. So the woman seems to be the main speaker in the whole book, and often she'll turn to her mates and she'll say, hey, don't awaken love until it so desires. But tonight's sermon is about the other minor character in the book. It's going to be about King Solomon. That's why we read from 1 Kings 3 and 1 Kings 11, which are all about King Solomon. We're going to be talking specifically tonight about Solomon's relationship to the book of Song of Songs. Solomon's relationship to the book of Song of Songs. So it might actually feel a little bit academic at the start, and it's going to get super duper helpful towards the end, or at least that's what I'm hoping. So that's the plan for tonight. Can I get a thumbs up if that sounds okay? Here we go. I would love for you to have a look at this picture coming up on the screen. This is in the New South Wales Art Gallery next to the Botanical Gardens. If you go in and you take the first available right-hand turn, you enter into a set of rooms, and you'll get this picture even bigger than the screen that you're viewing it on. And this is an artistic depiction, I think kind of helpful as an introduction to the guy who we call Solomon. He's standing on the stairs there. This is his palace. He's got wealth, he's got wisdom, so much so that the Queen of Sheba is a queen in and of her own right. She's walking up the stairs. She's visiting him to get a little peek and maybe to even to ask his counsel in some wise questions that she has. Now, what's really weird about Solomon and the Book of Song of Songs is all of those women in the background of the picture. Because if you read 1 Kings 3, you read 1 Kings 11, you realize those are probably depicting his many, many, many wives and concubines. You say, yes, that really happened. No, we would not recommend it. That was great. So all I want to do, no one ever laughs at my jokes. I appreciate it. What I want you to realize right from the outset is that it's weird, super weird, that Solomon has his name attached to the Book of Song of Songs, which is all about love and relationships. What I'm asking you to do here is to turn to the very first chapter of the Book of Song of Songs. If you can find it in your Bible, it's going to help you here. The Book of Song of Songs, try and get chapter 1, verse 1 open for you. And if that was too much, it's coming up on the screen. The first verse says, Solomon's Song of Songs. The literal background to that is, if you did a wooden translation of the Hebrew, it says, the Song of Songs, which is of Solomon. And we ask ourselves, in what sense is this book of Solomon? What is the connection between Song of Songs and Solomon? There have been at least four proposals that hold some weight. I told you we'd start off kind of academic, right? Here's the four main proposals. The first one and the most obvious idea, it could be that Solomon wrote it. So he's the author of Song of Songs, and it's got his name on it. As we go through today, I imagine that that perspective will become less and less appealing to you once we fill in more and more about Solomon's life. There's a second option, which is that it's dedicated to Solomon. So people wanted to bring gifts to this big, wise king, and so maybe someone else wrote it, and they presented it to him as a gift, and so it's his in that sense. A third option is that there's an affinity with the type of literature that's associated with Solomon. In today's term, you'd say we're reading wisdom literature, and that's different from historical literature in some of the Old Testament, or the law in other parts of the Old Testament. But they didn't really say that back then. If they wanted to say what we would call wisdom literature, they'd say, oh, it's Solomon. It's of Solomon. It's connected to Proverbs, for example, that kind of imagery. So maybe that's all it means, is that it's a wisdom literature kind of book. And there's a fourth option, which is that it's all about the subject matter, by which we mean Solomon is in the Book of Songs. So he's the subject matter. He's actually in it. Let me give you something from the leaders' growth group notes. So if you're a growth group member, your growth group leaders got given these cheat notes, and they read like this. The Song of Songs is beautiful poetry that delicately depicts the love, praise, and mutual enjoyment, especially sexual enjoyment, of a young married couple. It's set in contrast to the depersonalized and dehumanizing polygamy of Solomon. And so, let me show you one of the things that is written about Solomon in the book of Song of Songs. Thanks, by the way, to the slide team. I know I'm jumping all over the shop. You guys are being really patient with me. Chapter 8. Chapter 8 is where we're up to, verse 11. Solomon's in the first chapter. He's also in the last chapter. So when we talk about Solomon being the subject matter of this book, here's what I mean. Chapter 8, verse 11. Solomon had a vineyard in Baal Hamon. He let out his vineyard to tenants. Each was to bring for its fruit 1,000 shekels of silver. Verse 12. But my own vineyard is mine to give. The 1,000 shekels are for you, Solomon, and 200 are for those who tend its fruit. Now, it's totally okay if that wasn't clear to you on first reading what it means. I think here's what it means. This is the woman who's the centerpiece of the whole book of Song of Songs. She's the main speaker. And she's recounting a moment when she rejected an offer to be incorporated into Solomon's harem. She said no to Solomon and his polygamy. You know that because in verse 12, when she says, my own vineyard is mine to give. Vineyard throughout Song of Songs kind of means sexuality or maybe even your body. And she said, nah. You know, Solomon sends out people to try and find wonderful women to bring into his harem. He sends them out with some money to make it happen. And she said, no, my vineyard is mine to give. And from the rest of the book, you can tell who she's given it to, which is the man that she's really keen on. And so she says, you can keep your money, mate. Take that 1,000 shekels back with you. Give some to the people you sent out because they're doing their job fine. But I am not going to play love your way, Solomon. She says, my own vineyard is mine to give. Now, here's the thing. That video that we showed just at the start of the Bible reading, it kind of had one of the high points of the whole book in it, which is chapter 8, verses 6 and 7. Let me just read some of chapter 7, verse 7 for you. If one were to give all the wealth of one's house for love, it would be utterly scorned. If you're here tonight and church is kind of new for you, you can agree with this, right? Because this is just saying you can't buy love. And you say, amen. I agree with the Bible on at least that point. It says you can't buy love, but in chapter 8, verse 11 and 12, who tried to buy love? It was Solomon. Can you see here that Solomon is getting totally dragged under the bus? Solomon is not getting written about in a favorable light in this particular moment. And so when you say maybe Solomon wrote the book of Song of Songs, it's getting less and less likely. In fact, it seems like what is Solomon's relationship to the book of Song of Songs is this book is written against his version of love, which is give your money, fill your harem, use your power to gain sexual partners. And this book is like, no, that is not at all God's vision for sexuality, humanity, and flourishing. That's kind of level one on the Solomon background. I'd love to give you level two. So we're going to go a bit of a deeper dive. We'll use those passages that were read out for us just before. So I know it's a lot of Bible flicking, but could you come with me to 1 Kings 3? 1 Kings 3, which is what we read before. It's worth noting about Solomon that he started off really, really well. Solomon's faith journey starts on a high. You could say that Solomon from the beginning was Mr. Wisdom. Solomon from the beginning was Mr. Wisdom. So chapter 3, verse 5 in 1 Kings gives us some of those details. It says, at Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, ask for whatever you want me to give you. Skip forward to verse 9. So Solomon says, give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours? Verse 10, the Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, since you've asked for this and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, verse 12, I will do what you've asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Verse 13, moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both wealth and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. All that's saying is that Solomon started off really, really well, and you think that, hey, books like the book of Proverbs in the Bible are associated with Solomon. They're often called the Proverbs of Solomon. And you go, well, that makes sense, because Solomon had God-given wisdom. You could have said at the beginning of his life he was Mr. Wisdom. But here's the thing. By the time you get to chapter 11, he's totally blown it. And he's like, he's transformed from being Mr. Wisdom into Mr. Wives Dumb. You get to chapter 11, verse 1, and he lays out how this all works. Chapter 11, verse 1. King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter. By the way, this is not saying that you have to marry someone of the same race as you. It's making a totally different point that is laid out in verse 2. So King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter, Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites. Verse 2, they were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, you must not intermarry with them because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods. Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. Verse 3, he had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. The emphasis is more on Solomon being an idiot rather than this being the wives' fault. Verse 4, as Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. So all I'm trying to show you here is that start of his life was really great. He was Mr. Wisdom. End of his life, he turned into Mr. Wives Dumb, and he totally lost the plot. And so we can come all the way back to chapter 1, verse 1, and we can say, what is Solomon's relationship to the book of Song of Songs? Was he the author? Well, he kind of gets dragged under the bus, and it feels like the whole thing is actually written against his version of love and relationships. There is, though, one theory, which is probably in the land of theory, not super solid, but it sounds nice, so I'll give it to you, which is that maybe Solomon had a moment of repentance at the very end of his life. And he looks back on his life and he says, I've been a fool. And maybe he even writes this book to his daughters, who might be the daughters of Jerusalem, saying, don't do what I did. Don't do what I did. So maybe if he's the author in any sense, it would have to be something like that. Maybe somebody dedicated it to him. Maybe it's just an affinity kind of thing. It's written in the style of wisdom literature that he might have written around about 1 Kings 3 when he was really close to God. And maybe it's mostly just because he's in the book and it's because he's the subject matter of the book. I'll let you make up your mind about what you think. And thereby ends the academic part of the sermon. You've sat through the lecture. Well done to you. I would love at this point to change the tone a little bit, which is, hey, we've talked about Solomon a bit. How does this help? You know, none of you are up at 2 a.m. thinking, oh, gee, I'm really like concerned with who wrote the Book of Song of Songs. You're up at 2 a.m. because you're freaking out about the relationships you're in, the ones you want to be in, the things that you're excited about, the things that you're dreading, the things that you're currently experiencing. And I'd love to draw three crossovers between Solomon's experience and what might be part of your experience. Crossover number one. Who you love can draw you towards God, and it can dramatically draw you away from God. I guess I'm talking to this side of the room at this point, but if you're a parent, right? you know, and if you have parents, listen in, this is how they think. Right? If you have kids, one of your proudest moments is when they bring home a girlfriend or a boyfriend who's totally into God, and you're thinking, this person is absolutely going to help my kid in their relationship with God. This is a good choice of partner. And one of your greatest dreads, right, is that they would bring home somebody who you think, this person is not going to help them at all. This person is going to drag them away from faith. Right? If I talk to this side of the room, I know we're all spread out, right? But if you are in a life stage where you are yet to choose somebody who you will marry or somebody who you're really going to relate to in the long term as your partner, this is a massive choice. If you choose somebody who's going to lead you closer to God, amazing. If you choose somebody and you say, damn, they're really hot, but they're probably, they're probably going to lead me away from God, but like, who cares? You're kind of sealing your own fate. The biggest thing that you ought to search for in somebody who you're thinking about spending the rest of your life with, is this person going to draw me towards God or away from God? You see, Solomon, right? He connected himself to a bunch of people who literally worshipped other gods. And in so doing, he set his own downfall. Let's be people who learn from history, make smart choices. Obviously, if you're somebody and you're in a situation right now where you're saying, I'm kind of already in it, and I recognize that I've kind of failed on this, there's grace for you. We'd love to talk that through. We'd love to help you redeem that situation. But if you've got that situation ahead of you, please, please, please heed Solomon's story. That's crossover number one, who you love can draw you towards God or lead you away. Crossover number two, it's about following God in the past versus following God in the present. Following God in the past versus following God in the present. I imagine that for a lot of us here today, you look back on moments in your faith. It might have been a year ago, it might have been 10 years ago, whatever it is. And you say, that was when I was really on fire. That was the moment that I first came to know Jesus. That was the moment that I was really taking risks for God and putting myself out there. My greatest experience of faith, it was in the past. And you're looking at the future, and you're thinking, I'll probably just kind of hold down the fort. I'll probably just stick at it. I'll probably just ride it out. But really, my big moment of faith was back then. But it actually doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. I'd love for us to imagine and say, hey, you know, the next 10 years of my life, the next 50 years of my life, whatever it is, could be an increasing closeness to God, could be an increasing amount of being used by Him and seeing Him do amazing things through your Spirit-guided actions. Wouldn't that just be amazing? I want to paint a picture that says, you don't just say, I was on fire when I was 17, but then, you know, regular stuff got a hold of me and I kind of got over it. Your end trajectory, if you're a follower of Jesus, is actually towards being with God. That is the end place that you're going to hang out. And so where you want to go with your life is on that same trajectory. Where you're going informs how you live right now. And on the flip side of that, one of the things that really encourages me here about this group is that there are so many of us. And you would actually say, hey, if you were going to chart my faith journey, like as a line chart or something, it would actually start low and end up high. You say, maybe I was raised in a family where I didn't really do God stuff, or my parents weren't really into it or whatever, but I'm kind of the first one in my immediate family who's stepping forward for Jesus. I'm kind of the one leading the way in faith, and my journey is upwards. And I'm just so excited that there are so many of us stepping in that direction. In fact, halfway through this series, we're going to take a pause for 1 week. We're going to do Celebration Sunday. People are going to jump in the baptism tank. We're going to cheer because their greatest moments of faith are moving forward and they're not just living in the past. So there's my second moment of crossover. Number one, who you love can draw you towards God or lead you away. Number two, following God in the past versus following God in the present. This third one's a bit more sensitive. It's a bit more direct. Here it is. Who or what is dragging you away from faith? Who or what? And this will be a different answer for all of us, But they say in things like Alcoholics Anonymous that like the biggest thing is just saying, yeah, I do have a problem. And once you make that identification, you've gone so much of the distance already. And I think it's the same thing, right? Solomon here, he was particularly dragged away by his wives and concubines, but I doubt that for you, you have 700 wives and 300 concubines at home. It's something else for you. And I would ask you, what is the thing that's dragging you back? Because once you name it, you gain an incredible amount of power to actually do something about it. And even consider naming it to your friend and say, I think this is what's holding me back. Bringing that out into the light is only going to help you as you try and move forward. So there's three overlaps between Solomon's life and our existence. And at the moment, I imagine that most of us are introspecting. We're looking inside. But the most appropriate way to finish this talk is to finish by looking at Jesus, because right at the end of his life, he's talking to one of his disciples, and apparently he talked about how the whole Old Testament points to him. And we don't get the details on that, but we kind of flesh it out every time we come to the Old Testament. When we think about Solomon, for example, how does Solomon point us towards Jesus? Well, you can say that Jesus is the true and better Solomon. Right? Solomon, wise guy, big power. What does he use his power to do? It's to exert control over others and to try and buy love, as if that was even a thing. Jesus, wise guy, total power. What does he spend his whole time doing? Just serving people. He's always down low. He's always bringing comfort and patience into a world where people were just throwing accusations at each other. And when we think about the Song of Songs as well, right, you go, it's worth pointing out that Jesus was single. This is the guy we worship. And he had the fullest experience of what it could ever mean to be a human. And he was never in a relationship. You say Jesus is the true and better Solomon because he points us to what it actually looks like to relate to other people in the most beautiful way possible. Come to we'll finish with this, the Song of Songs, chapter 8, verse 7, the real high point of the whole thing. Solomon gets dragged under the bus because he tried to give wealth for love. But the story of the Bible through one angle is that the God of the universe wants to love you. He wants to be in a relationship with you. And how does he do that? He doesn't give his wealth for it. He gave something even more valuable. That Jesus coming to die on that cross for your sins in your place as your substitute. You have an option that you could scorn that as one of the criminals on the cross did, but you could take the other avenue and you could put your faith in that. You could see how beautiful it is. You could accept that and become a Christian actually, because the God of the universe is all about love. And most specifically, he loves you no matter what you did last night, no matter what you're going to do tomorrow morning. And he wants to be in a relationship with you. He made it possible through the death of his son on the cross. And will you scorn that or will you take it on?